This is a production of Cornell University.
UA meeting, September 26, 2007.
In a short while, according to reports from various quarters. And so we'll have a quorum assembled soon, but I think we can take care of at least the non-quorum items soon and maybe even begin some discussion of in item six, if we jump ahead, so that we can allow for people to who have to leave early amongst our presenters. So are there any additions to this agenda? No, right? We have a big agenda. No, are there any additions to the agenda? Any comments upon the present agenda? Fine. We can introduce one. Let's see. Mark, you're new as well, right? Okay, Mark. So would you, we have two new members, but actually in order to introduce everyone to everyone, we'll just run through the present attendees and explain your role here. Yes. Starting with Roger. Roger.
Hi, I'm Roger Rodriguez. I'm from the law school. I was just elected yesterday.
Terrific. He's a and Tamara, who's not new.
I'm Tamara Carlos. I'm also the director of Human Development.
That's good. And let's see, Matthew.
I'm Dave.
David Kirsten.
I'm a senior and I study economics and government. I'm Matthew. I'm a student at the NASA. And I think our major
I am more content with government and possibly the primary major.
Great.
I'm Barbara Hick. I'm co-chair of the Campus Planning Committee.
I am Steve from the Office of the Assembly.
Amy O'Donnell from the Office of the Assembly.
Martin Hatch from faculty.
Jim Brown, faculty.
David Lee, Transportation Services.
Captain Wolf, Trumpeter Wolf, Dusty Marksex, and we're with David on the transportation side.
Charlie Walker, senior of the faculty.
David Gross, on faculty.
Wonderful. Elizabeth Sanders, faculty. So we now too have a quorum. Wonderful. So we can proceed with the approval of minutes from May 2nd. I think they were submitted to us yesterday. I hope you had a chance to read them. I've looked through them. They seem okay. There are a couple of grammatical matters, but I don't think we need to change those for approval. I think probably the people who need to look most closely are the people who were here on May 2nd. Is there any questions about the minutes? Who has read them? Let's put it that way. Okay. Any corrections or additions, Elizabeth? Any from then I'd like to proceed to say that those who have read them appear to agree that they're okay. I'll provide you with a couple of minor grammatical things, tenses and things like that. But I'd like to ask for a motion to approve the minutes of May 2nd meeting. Please. Dan Brown. And a second, Randy Wayne. And, Jim Glenn. All in favor? Terrific. We've taken that. Opposed. All right. We've taken action. Next, old business. We're going to run through these very quickly, even though we need new UA liaisons committees. At the last meeting, we discussed. We already have one for the Family Services Committee. We have for Transportation. We have for Campus Planning and Codes and Judicial Committee. There are other committees. We asked you to look at the committee list of standing committees in the charter. and think about ones in which you have an interest. I know that there is some campus energy towards having us assume a role vis-a-vis the United Religious Work, because there are decisions being made that should have or might be better for the campus as a whole if they had campus-wide discussion such as would take place in the University Assembly. And so since we have now three new members here, and I think two others who are not here presently, we can hold off on new committees liaisons, but with the suggestion that the new members take a look at some of those undergraduate members, take a look at the duties vis-a-vis, for example, health services, campus store, which are our responsibilities. Before we do away with these committees, which would take a charter change anyway, we want to think about whether or not we really have a role that we should be assuming. And I'd say that there's good reason to, though I won't be a person to be the liaison, but others might come up with some ideas about how they might interact in those committees. So please think about that, and at our next meeting we'll maybe go the next step, and somebody will have come forward and had expressed an interest in one or another of the ones that aren't yet filled.
Did somebody jog our memory by bringing us different?
Well, I think it's better to just say what we do have, and then you look at all the standing committees and decide which ones. Planning, transportation, coach, and judicial all have. And the new Family Services Committee has liaison, and the subcommittee thereof, the child care, has liaison. So ones that come off the top of my head now that don't is United Religious Work. Actually, there's budget as well, and campus store, and health services. Those ones come right off the top of my head. I could look them up, but it would take too much time now. But I think it's better for you to look at the charter and think about those things. Undergraduate members, I can really encourage you to think this is a good way to get to know, you know, the functioning of government in the university community, the economics of it, the politics of it, and so forth. So, do we need to approve members of the University Hearing Board?
Yes.
Well, who, do we have the list?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. Okay. There are, thank you, May 9th memo, University Hearing Board. We have five members, but oh yes, okay, five members that we need to be approved for University Hearing Board. Would you folks just take a glance at them right away, and then do we have a motion to approve the members of the university? Randy Wayne, second to that motion. Steve Matthews. All right, all in favor of approving these members? Tim DeVote, Cindy Cap, and so forth. Opposed? All right, they stand approved unanimously. Let's see, report from standing committees. Barbara, you asked if you could report first. I don't know. Would you mind if we had the one before yours? That's acceptable? All right. Then we'll move Report B, the Campus Planning Committee, which is a preliminary report. Actually, the full report will be taking place at the next meeting. Is that right? Okay. Do you want to do the announcement of this, or do you want? Do you want?
Yeah, I'll say.
Okay.
I went to the campus. I met with Dean Edmondson about a month ago.
University
planner, and I went to my first campus planning committee meeting a couple days ago. And I have to say, I'm very impressed with the diversity of expert opinion and the diversity of user opinion that went together to make a really visionary plan of how the campus could move in the future. And that master plan seems to be sort of like the Constitution, in that you have to, if you wanted to go against the principles enunciated in the plan, you have to make a good argument for it. And it seems like the plan is just very well thought out. And Bartleby from the co-chairs of the master committee.
Okay, so again, I'm a co-chair of the campus planning committee, and my understanding about being invited to was that this group was interested in some background information on generally what the campus planning committee does, and then specifically how the university assembly could be helpful in the current production and fostering review of the comprehensive master plan. So that's what I'm prepared to address. I'll just note that I'm a co-chair of the Campus Planning Committee. Stefan Schmidt, who's an assistant professor in city and regional planning, is the other co-chair. And as Randy noted, there's two staff to the Campus Planning Committee, Nina Amundsen, who's the university planner, and Jesse Dimmick, who's the staff to Nina. So again, just as an overview to give you the idea of the charge of the Campus Planning Committee, so you have that for context, is that the Campus Planning Committee is charged essentially with reviewing and making recommendations to the president of the university. What we review and make recommendations about is the physical planning for the campus. So that includes land use planning and development. It includes landscape issues. It includes commenting on transportation and parking issues. And it includes commenting and review of all new construction projects. So it's a pretty comprehensive planning oversight committee, again, with the ability to make recommendations to the president. I understand you're a transportation type person, but just to emphasize that CPC, the Campus Planning Committee, works in consultation with the Transportation Advisory Committee, about roads, parking lots, or those kinds of things. So here's an important point. Membership of the Campus Planning Committee is something that you should be aware of. There's four presidential appointments made by the president of the university. There's eight position appointments. I won't run through all of them, but they include things like, or people like, the chair of the Department of Architecture, the chair of the Department of Landscape Architecture, the chair of the Department of Natural Resources. So those people who, by virtue of their particular position, are given a place, or their designee is given a place in the Campus Planning Committee. From the perspective of the University Assembly, what's important to know is that there are eight, we're called at-large members, and these members are named by the respective assemblies for a two-year term. So these are important to know. They're on the Campus Planning Committee. There's one slot for a graduate or professional student who is named by the graduate professional student assembly. It has been notoriously hard to get somebody to fill that role, and even when somebody has been named, it's been notoriously difficult to get them to attend a meeting. So one of the things that I would suggest that the UA, because the UA actually charters, as I understand it, the CPC, I'll mention this again later, but one thing that the UA can think about doing is to actually change the membership of the Campus Planning Committee such that there would be two graduate professional student assembly members. There would be a commitment from that assembly to designate members to serve, but if there's two, we might better be able to get one to come when the other one can't. So we would at least have a graduate student voice there. The other members from the assemblies are two undergraduate students from the student assembly, and I have to say that those two representatives have been extremely active with the CPC, so really encourage that to continue. There are two employee members from the employee assembly, two faculty members, and then there is supposed to be one UA liaison to the CPC. In the past, I don't know who that liaison has been, which itself highlights the problem. Now I know that clearly this year Randy is the liaison, and Randy is taking a very active role, for which we on the CPC are very appreciative. And then there are ex officio members who are added to the TCC. So I'll come back to the membership point because that's an important role for the UA to play. But let me just review some of the activities of the campus planning committee. So when there is a planning project or a capital project, a building that's going up on campus, the site plan, where it's going to be located, comes to the campus planning committee. So we review not only where it's going to be, but also the site plan criteria, which means, you know, what's supposed to happen with, you know, runoff and, you know, the kind of infrastructure issues that go with that. Another key role that we play, and we've been playing this now for about 2.5 years, maybe 3 years now, is that the campus planning committee was really the instigator of, well, one of the main instigators at least, of prompting universities to engage in comprehensive master planning. The campus planning committee undertook a review of how other universities engage in master planning and prepared a report that went to the president, basically advocating that Cornell would engage in master planning. Luckily, about that time, the president was interested. Other university administrators were also thinking along those lines. So here we are now that we're almost 2 years into a process of working with a consulting firm called Urban Strategies from Toronto, engaging various elements of the university community in developing a comprehensive master plan for the university with essentially a 60-year time horizon. So it's pretty ambitious, pretty visionary, lays out suggestions about how the physical structure of the campus will look over the next 60 years, and obviously sets us up for longer than that. So over the next year, one of the primary activities of the Campus Planning Committee is going to be continuing to work with Urban Strategies and with the campus community on the comprehensive master plan. There are two members from the Campus Planning Committee who not only work on this master plan through our own work on our own committee, but two of our members sit on the Campus Master Plan Working Committee, which is kind of the core group that really drives a lot of the decision making associated with the master plan. So let me then note how the assemblies have been involved in the master planning effort, because this is kind of an important point. That, as I understand it, the master planning team, Urban Strategies, met with the employee assembly, the student assembly, and the graduate and professional student assembly, and members of the faculty senate. I don't believe they met specifically with the university assembly. So one of the key issues is that since the university assembly has representatives or liaisons from each of the other assemblies, and since the campus planning committee has members appointed by these various assemblies, one of the things that we could really use your help with is one, going back to your individual assemblies and saying, we need to have clear communication from our assembly representative on the campus planning committee to come back to our assembly, whether it's a student assembly or employee assembly or now the university assembly with Randy here. And so really set up a process by which the members of the CPC who are appointed by the various assemblies actually feel responsible to go back to their assembly and report back on what's going on with the master planning effort, gather input from that assembly group, and bring that back to the campus planning committee. That's how the system is supposed to work, but it hasn't, I don't think, been working very smoothly in that way. So, you know, again, your input, your voices, your assembly voices will be heard much more strongly if we can get that communication mechanism working. So then I'll also encourage that if anybody from this group has time this evening, after your meeting, from 5 o'clock this evening until 9 p.m. rather, at the Sultan Garden Inn, the presentation, another open house on the campus master plan is occurring. There's a presentation at 5, but there's also one at 7. And then there's a time around those up until 9 p.m. for input. So again, I'll just highlight one, communication processes could be better and more formalized. And then secondly, I'd encourage the UA to think about changing the membership part of the charter to add one additional graduate professional student member, make the commitment to fill both of those place spots, and then hopefully one of those people will be able to attend the CPC meeting. So with that, I'll leave it at that. If Randy wants to add anything, or and then ask if there are any questions.
I went to the open house today, and although the visuals weren't so good because of the light, the sense of respect that came from George, the person from Urban Strategy, about the academic mission and the landscape and the community was just so impressive that I recommend going to the open house tonight if you have time.
Barbara, can I ask you to just give us a memo with those two requests on it, unless you already you've done that. Okay, Randy, you have them. Okay, Randy, then you'll frame them. You'll frame them, and we can make consider them in as this part of our business. Okay.
And is the master plan now?
Charlie.
I just wanted to reinforce the suggestion that two graduate students be on the CPC, because a lot of the things in the graduate student manifesto that is brought to the Board of Trustees are going to be accomplished through the CPC. I think it's a very important place to have input. And so I would encourage our graduate student representatives to really take it seriously, because I think it's an opportunity to make their case in yet another form.
Terrific. So maybe we should be doing something, Randy, in the next next meeting or thereafter, at least to discuss and debate the this. And the other resolution, the other proposal that you made about increasing communication both from you to us and us to you is through Randy, and that's what we're coming up with, both through these resolutions, but also if we can get some kind of report in the next meeting, the more formal report, Randy, I don't know who would do that, whether it would be somebody from CPC other than you or via you, about, you know, points of interest for us to focus upon. We all should go to the open house, and we all should acquaint ourselves with the master plan process and where it's gotten to thus far. But we also need to have somebody from the committee to, you know, focus us a little bit more on an issue, one issue or another. Elizabeth.
If somebody's going to come from the Toronto Group to talk to us, that would be good. I will try to go to the one tonight that happened at 8 o'clock. I can get in for the last half hour. That would be good. And I wish maybe you could just tell us in a couple of minutes whether the overall goals of the master plan are, you know, what they are. Do they aim at the preservation and enhancing of the natural environment and alternative modes of transportation? It's so hard to get bike racks and bike lanes, and when things great oak tree fell a little acre and this frenzy of building and how this hideous milk sign thing that would make you go to the tunnel and
right.
Block out your grand view of the gorge. And I guess they can't stop those things in progress, but you know, I'm just really worried.
Right. Well, what do you want me to respond to that?
Well, let's get a couple more comments and then we'll decide whether or not this is something we can do today, because we have another report that we want to get to, or whether this isn't just, you know, something that we need to talk about at the next session when we're going to have a real go-round. Maybe, Randy, you could take note of these questions that are raised, and they can be subjects of our debate, Elizabeth, you know, and others. But let's hear some others. Yeah.
I went to open house as regards to this last year. I can't make them this year. But I have looked at the current master plan as suggested, and one thing that strikes me is just a real lack of input from users from the standpoint, nobody's gone to the department to say, okay, what are your needs for the next 30 years? Where do you want your buildings? Where do you, in our case, where do you want your livestock? How far can students walk to work with cattle? It's much more kind of, you know, painting a palette. We should have urban buildings here, and this should be that. There's been really no specific input. The open houses have been the only contact. And as individuals, members of our department, at the last year went and said, look, you know, having this entrance to the ag school with the pastures here and all that would be great. And they agreed. The people who were there were just like you say, they were very open and encouraging. And they wiped out even what was there last year, much less in the new plan. It's all, the whole area is built over. There's, our building's gone. There's no, I mean, it seems to be a very abstract thing driven more by sort of urban planning theory rather than specific needs of, you know, horticulture, specific needs of actual departments. That's not going into it. And I think they need to pull back and incorporate very specific needs and very specific parts of campus rather than just saying, okay, this will be paved, this will be natural, this will be. I think that the open houses are great, but they're not adequate user input. They should be going department by department and harmonizing this sort of abstract urban planning thing with the individual plans of the academic units on campus. Otherwise, you know, this plan will be something that the people doing academics are hit with rather than you know, part of planning. I don't think they've been as large a part of planning as you think, because, you know, nobody's really formally asked our department to weigh in on that. Right.
So this dovetails with Elizabeth's in many ways, and I think it's not only just a question of natural and user friendly and so forth. It's also looking at you know, who are the users and asking them a little bit more to participate both on an individual level and department level in thinking about the space that is the campus.
Yeah, but I can comment.
Right, we're going to take a couple more and then we'll decide. I think this is developing actually as something that needs to be a whole session with us talking, and perhaps that's why it's great to have this introduced this week, but because what we'll find is that we need the session next session as devoted almost totally to it. If that makes sense, after these open houses and after people now spend some time with the master plan, is that acceptable? It's on our agenda. Any other comments? Yeah.
You used the phrase graduate professional students. Is that a subset of graduate students?
I thought that's really...
No, that's called graduate and professional students. That's the combination.
Okay, but the professional school is a different thing.
Right.
It's not specifically students in professional schools.
No, graduate and professional. Any other questions? Okay, I think... Yeah.
Ira's going to set up a blog site, just like the CJC.
Qualification there. I can set up such a site if a need is expressed for it and a group of topics are enumerated.
Okay.
Well, a group of
topics. I would be very interested to hear feedback about that.
Well, that is a point of discussion that we could get out of the way in 5 minutes. That is whether or not a blog site for this, for University Assembly and constituencies about this, for the education of our committee and us as a whole, you know, should be set up by the University Assembly office. What do you what are feelings about that?
Who would be in charge of maintaining it?
Well, just like the Cozen Judicial one, it would be the Assembly's office.
Just one thing I want to emphasize here that I hope everybody's cognizant of is that this master planning process has been going on for years, and the university plan. planner's office, Mina Amundsen, has collected huge amounts of feedback from vast portions of the campus community, which you should be aware of, and there's already a mechanism in place for collecting that feedback. The usefulness of the blog and the Codes and Judicial Committee was that because it was people's feedback immediately went online on a website, people could, you know, see it in real time. I don't know if that's an appropriate thing.
Yeah, I mean, if I could just say
sure, go ahead,
that, that I think if the UA is going to devote substantive time to talking about this, that it would be great to invite Mina Amundsen to be here, because she's been involved in the master planning process the entire time. She could speak the iteration that has been public thus far. She could speak to how, for example, farm services is going to be included, how greenhouse concerns are being included, how large animal facilities were being included. So, again, based on many comments, urban strategies did not visit department to department, but there have been mechanisms for, you know, college-level input that was supposed to synthesize some of the concerns through departments, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, again, there's a new iteration available now. You know, I understand some people feel that, you know, if you haven't known about it or haven't had the input that you wanted, it would be appropriate, though, to let Mina know that as a staff person to the planning effort. This is on schedule for the master plan to be presented to the Board of Trustees at the January meeting and for the process to be finalized in March of 2008. So, you know, that's the time frame that you're working with. So, you know, critical comments like that really need to get in quickly to Mina through the master plan comment process.
All right. So, yes.
I just wonder if it would be useful to have a link from University Assemblies to the master planning process. I think there's a website.
There's a website. www.masterplan.cornell.edu.
Yeah, but get it on the Assembly's website. Seems to me that would be a more useful thing than doing our own blog.
Fine.
Yeah.
Sure.
All right. Thank you very much. I think perhaps. I thought the plan was that Mina would Amundsen would be invited for next week. Yes.
Well, we didn't know when the next plan would be. She would like to come.
Well, it's next week.
Next week.
Next.
October 10th.
October
24th.
Who is looking at that?
Mina's office.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, the two alternatives were October 10th and October 24th, and October 24th looks better. And I think that's also the next regular scheduling.
No, it's the 10th.
Okay.
Yeah, and I thought that it was subsequent to this.
The 10th wasn't as needed.
Yeah, she may have had a conflict with the 10th.
Oh, okay. Well, given the timetable that you've talked about, the sooner the better. If the 20, I mean, at least for these comments that we have, but okay. What are we searching for now? 24th to 10th. Well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for your interest. It's an important process.
So we move on. We'll to the Transportation Advisory Committee. And Dan Brown.
So the 1 minute report from Energy State and Effort.
Great.
We have first meeting on the 19th, at which time we kind of got organized and discovered a couple things. One is the different constituent assemblies need to send more representatives to the Transportation Advisory Committee. We didn't have students or grad students. I think Matt had one employee and one faculty member. A lot of other people came, and we did get a lot organized, but it's essential that all the constituent assemblies get somebody on there, like, tomorrow, so that for the next meeting in October, we're full rank. And at that meeting, we plan to take up some items for actually deliberation and decision, but also we want this committee, this Transportation Advisory Committee, to elect a president or a chair or whatever, so that they can work with the support of the student. Ms. Eckert from Transportation has offered, and so they can get things going and you know the committee can take, you know, charge of itself and pursue all of this, and I could go back to be just the
liaison
rather than, you know, having to apply electrodes every meeting. So hopefully the October meeting, if the constituent assembly has all of their members there, they can choose their own leadership, and that then they can take off. The hope is that any new initiatives the community has or anything that transportation administration plans to do for next fall, that they'll get those proposals to this group fairly shortly, so that they can be deliberated and recommendations can be made to the university assembly for policy changes, and recommendations made to administration for execution of those policy changes. So we need to get going pretty soon. We've already started. One of the things that is going to affect and be closely entwined with efforts in improving transportation is going to be efforts in improving transportation for the township that surrounds much of Cornell. And there's been a several year planning effort. I don't know how many years, 3 or 4?
We're just pretty much finishing up our second year.
Second year, okay. Which is transportation related, this environmental impact statement for Cornell and the surrounding municipality for much of the campus. And Dave Lee, who's, among other things, in charge of communication out of the Department of Transportation and Mail Services, has come to give us a presentation about what that's all about. And can explain it better than I just know.
Fair enough. I'm Dave Lee from Transportation Services. I also sit on the TGEIS working group. TGEIS is the transportation focused generic environmental impact statement, which is why we call it TGEIS. And so TGEIS is approaching a major milestone. Cornell in this is being done through the State Environmental Quality Review Law, or SEQR. And Cornell is the applicant, the lead agency for it is the town of Ithaca. And when we began the process, we agreed upon a scope or a table of contents for what this TGEIS would contain with the town. And sometime in late October, we're going to be submitting a draft of the TGEIS to the town for what's called adequacy review, at which time they determine whether or not we have adequately addressed what we said we were going to in that table of contents. After that begins a formal public comment period. And public comments are all recorded. All the questions, comments, suggestions are recorded and responded to form what will be the final version of the TGEIS. Before all that happens, we are coming to each of the constituent assemblies as well as to the University Neighborhood Council to present to you where we are so far and the direction in which we are leaning at this point, and to try and get a sense from the assemblies and the constituencies if you agree with the general direction that we're taking. None of this is specific plans. None of this is carved in stone yet. What this is a concept, a conceptual direction. So with that, I want to thank you for the opportunity to meet with you today and to share a preview of the couple of documents that are about to go public, so to speak, from a project that will affect every one of us who works and studies at Cornell. I should pause long enough to tell you that I'm joined today by Catherine Wolf, principal from Trowbridge and Wolf Landscape Architects, as a consultant helping head up this whole process, and Will Palmquist, who is the transportation planner, is here also to help document all of your questions, comments, and suggestions so that we can bring them away with us today. So the two documents that we're talking about are the Transportation-Focused Generic Environmental Impact Statement, or TGEIS, and the 10-Year Transportation Impact Mitigation Strategies, or TIMS documents. And these come at a critical time for the Cornell community. Beginning now, we need to move more people with fewer vehicles. These documents are based on data that you and I supplied about our travel habits and preferences in a travel survey that was completed by faculty, staff, and students in 2005. They look ahead to a time of potential population growth at Cornell University, when an institution with a national reputation for making smart transportation choices will be challenged to do even more in the context of Cornell's commitment to sustainability. There are important choices to be made about how we travel and how our transportation needs and patterns impact the Cornell campus and the surrounding communities. I hope you'll take the next few minutes to study our analysis of the survey findings to tell us if we heard you right and if the strategies and actions we propose are the best possible ways to make sustainable transportation a part of Cornell's future. People in the surrounding communities are anxious to know how we intend to manage our transportation impact and whether all of us, as faculty, students, and staff of the university, are in agreement on our strategies and actions. Before we talk about the survey and the generic environmental impact statement and the mitigation strategies and where we go from here, let's try to remember why all this was necessary. Except for those who live on campus, we're all commuters. All that movement requires transportation, whether by car or bus, foot, bicycle, or skateboard. And that's the problem. All that commuting has significant impact on the environment and on the communities we pass through on the way to campus. That's what this whole process has been about. We weren't looking at transportation within the bounds of the campus. To make things even more interesting, the numbers of us who are commuting is increasing. Probably not the number of undergraduate students, which is projected to stay relatively stable, but more likely graduate students, researchers, and employees who will work and study at a dynamic Cornell University. For the past 17 years, transportation demand management programs have taken Cornell's responsibility to reduce the impact of its transportation needs very seriously. As Cornell continues to grow and the number of commuters increases, that responsibility becomes an imperative for a socially and environmentally responsible and sustainable institution, for you and for every member of the Cornell community. That brings us back to the first document that we're in the midst of preparing, the transportation-focused generic environmental impact statement, which includes the Cornell travel survey results, as well as some predicted scenarios of what traffic to the campus and through the surrounding communities might be like in the future as Cornell's population grows. The 2005 travel survey that provided data to the TGUIT about what it might take for Cornell community members to change their commuting habits was a good baseline. One finding from the travel survey is especially encouraging. 45% of Cornell employees do not drive to work alone in single occupancy vehicles, or SOVs. So we know already that 45% of employees come to campus in other ways, compared to a national average of only 25%. However, if the university continues to grow, as good as this is, it isn't nearly good enough. If 55% of new people drive SOVs to campus, the impact could be serious. The survey gave us the clearest picture yet of how far and from where commuters travel to get to the Cornell campus. This following series of maps illustrates just how many and just how far. The red line, which is this one, doesn't appear very red, but it surrounds what we call the destination area and encompasses the campus, which is reached through the surrounding communities. This is the border of the city of Ithaca, which is surrounded by the town, which is in turn surrounded by the county, with 13 various municipalities scattered throughout. Here you see that approximately 25% of Cornell employees live and commute from outside of Thompson County. Approximately 40% live within Tompkins County, but outside the city and town of Ithaca. About 20% live within the town of Ithaca. And about 15% live within the city of Ithaca itself. Already, 40% of all employees who live in the city use alternative methods of transportation. We need to be creative in order to be able to enable that participation level from those who live in more rural areas. Employees are great at joining carpools and ride shares. They're frequent users of public transit, and about 12% of employees bike or walk to work. For many, they're responding to incentives that have made Cornell University a national leader in alternative transportation, incentives like the OmniRide program. They've learned that although they aren't paying parking fees, those fees may have been the smallest expense associated with SOV commuting. And about those bus riding, walking, bike riding graduate students. Fewer than a fifth of them drive alone to campus. Our graduate professional students have different commuting patterns depending on when they're teaching classes or taking classes, conducting research, or working in the library. So a good transportation plan has to broaden its scope to accommodate their needs and expectations as well. The vast majority of commuting undergrads walk to campus and, through transit incentives, are discovering the convenience of taking the bus. The significant finding from the survey is that 75% of the drivers of single-occupancy vehicles to campus are employees. This is the same constituency that is likely to be growing as Cornell University grows. So we ask, what will it take to keep more single-occupancy vehicles away from the campus and surrounding communities? And you told us, in very specific terms, but also with some rather big hits. For instance, those of you who live close enough say you would consider walking if there were more sidewalks. Others would walk if there were a more affordable range of housing available closer to campus. The same goes for bicycling under the right conditions. Cyclists told us what they need to ride safely. You told us, too, that transit would be more appealing if it was more connected to convenient park and ride routes, and if it ran close to where you live more frequently and longer hours. And that you would join carpools or van pools if it was convenient and cost-effective. Given the high level of interest in our area for using alternatives, the question before us is, what changes or incentives could motivate a shift towards sustainable transportation at Cornell? We have a highly motivated constituency. You're not afraid to tell us what you need and what we ought to do about it. The community surrounding the Cornell campus never hesitate to express their feelings either. This brings us to the TIMS, the 10-year Transportation Impact Mitigation Strategy. We've responded with some innovative strategies and action plans that can make a growing Cornell University a low-impact neighbor. There's never been a better time to get behind this draft action plan that you helped create and to tell the greater Ithaca community this is what a sustainable Cornell University needs to do. The TIMS is being produced based on the TGI's findings and, when complete, will serve as an operational plan for Cornell Transportation Services over the next 5 to 10 years, directing these ongoing enhancements and incentives. But it's important to note that Cornell will continue to provide parking and to accommodate SOV commuters. This is an effort to encourage, not force, transportation alternatives by expanding and improving these options. The TIMS will include a kind of transportation planner's wish list, but we plagiarized a bit. This is really your wish list, too, your needs and expectations for greater sustainability at Cornell and in the neighborhoods that surround it, expanded and developed by some of the best transportation planners in the business. Peripheral park and ride lots are great places for single-occupancy vehicles to stay while we are at Cornell. With more of these lots in strategic locations, there's an opportunity to intercept Cornell-bound commuter traffic outside the urban core and reduce traffic impact on the adjacent neighborhoods while reducing the demand for parking on campus. As I'm sure you'd remind us, park and ride lots need frequent, direct, and extended public transit to be effective. More of us might join all the undergraduate walkers if improvements to the pedestrian network were implemented. Despite all the hills, Ithaca really is a marvelous place to walk. Nevertheless, things could be better. We need more sidewalks and safer pedestrian crossings. And through TGI's community open houses, we have a better idea of where. Ideally, between our buses and our feet, there ought to be practically no place in Ithaca we can't reach. When it's time to take a load off your feet and take a seat on the bus, We need easier ways to make that transition, linking sidewalks, neighborhoods, and facilities to transit. Besides sidewalks, multi-use trails can increase pedestrian and bicycle access. For example, there's an old railroad bed between the East Ithaca Recreation Way and Varna, which could be developed to link that community and the campus. We can do more things to encourage cycling, too. One approach to a more robust bicycle culture on campus and in the community is to educate cyclists, motorists, and pedestrians about their rights and their responsibilities to each other. Building a strong cycling culture can be aided, too, by the creation of full-featured bike centers and bike stairs. A staircase like the one on the right enables cyclists to roll rather than carry their bikes up and down stairs. Cornell University has long been a partner and a friend in public transit on campus and in the greater Ithaca area. If nearly 14% of Cornell employees and 40% of graduate students regularly use transit for their commute now, then it follows that with improved transit, there's potential for a substantial increase in those numbers. A good GDM program has allowed us to provide information and incentives to commuters to encourage them to choose alternatives to the single occupancy vehicle. However, the TIMS identify strategies to improve and expand our GDM programs, for example, by examining telecommuting, by paying people to leave their cars at home, and by adding van pooling and car sharing to the mix. Now, our initial efforts can be policy changes and program enhancements, but there may be changes in the roadway systems surrounding and leading to campus that will help as well. Cornell owns most of the streets on the central campus and can have a direct effect on them. However, all those roads and intersections we use on the way to work, or from campus to the mall, or from residence halls to the lake, are in areas where Cornell's neighbors take traffic rather seriously. This is another opportunity for Cornell to be a good neighbor and a partner by participating in improvements to intersections and roadways in the surrounding communities. In the TIMS, we have some strategies, or at least a working draft of strategies, to mitigate the impact of our growth and to make Cornell University the sustainable effort we all hope it can be, and which President Scorton, through the President's climate commitment, has committed to be. Although TGEIS far predated this agreement, the benefits gained through the TIMS will directly accrue to this commitment to sustainability. And it doesn't stop with this process. The TIMS is designed to be a living document, with regular updates, likely at 5-year intervals, to be certain that we're meeting our goals or to revise our strategies to meet or exceed them. Clearly, we have some challenging work ahead of us. So far, with your help, we've learned a lot about the travel patterns and behaviors of the Cornell community. So how can you, individually, and as a leader at Cornell, support this sustainable transportation effort? As an individual, you can do your part for sustainability by participating in the programs that are growing out of this process. As an assembly, you need to tell the administration and local community that sustainable transportation options are important to Cornellians and that you endorse this plan of action. The ultimate goal is to get people, not cars, to campus. Then to help every one of us move about the campus conveniently and expeditiously, and to get us safely home at the end of the day with minimal impact on the communities we pass through. That is the transportation part of Cornell's commitment to sustainability. It starts with you and me and the choices we make beginning today. Before you get behind the TGEIS and the transportation impact mitigation strategies, I know you must have some questions. Please feel free to ask them now. My colleagues are here to take note of your comments, questions, and suggestions. Also, if there are questions you think of later or want to share in the public forum, please visit our website, tgeisproject.org, and drop us an email. And fire away.
Thank you.
All right. How are you planning on increasing van and carpooling? Are you creating a system through which people can type in their address and see who lives near them? Or how are you planning on encouraging that? Like, how is it going to be easier on people who live in the community to figure out how to carpool with people near them?
Okay. I think we recognize that we need to do more to at least publicize the ride matching software that we already have in place, which we really haven't had, haven't really taken enough time to do. The other thing, van pooling doesn't exist yet. So developing a van pooling program is really important, especially when you consider that some of the people coming from so far away, I mean, communities like Syracuse, there are a lot of people coming from Syracuse commuting to campus every day. There's no bus service for them, so they're driving alone or they're picking up ad hoc carpools. We're working right now at a community level with Ithaca College, with the city, with the county, with TCAT, to develop a community-wide van pool program, which will, which will greatly increase the numbers of potential participants for such a program. And we're working with a national company, BTSI, which provides van pooling services for communities to try and bring that into the area. And we're getting a lot of cooperation, a lot of interest. We're not in this alone. So that's a big step, particularly for out-of-county commuters. Van pooling starts to become really, really cost-efficient when you're talking about people who are commuting 20 miles or more one way.
Kind of piggybacking off that question, what plans do you have in place for grad students? Unlike undergrads, 70% of grad students don't walk to campus. Many of us do live around campus, but many of them also live farther away from campus. And with our times and our odd schedules, sometimes we're kind of more like teachers, teaching classes, things of that general nature. But it's my understanding we're not eligible to participate in a lot of the ride share van type of programs.
Right, currently that's the case. Currently, the programs for faculty and staff are funded through from the benefits overhead. So the employee benefits pool.
Okay.
So there's a funding source in place for that. Part of what we're doing with you guys is we're going to the administration to try and get more money set aside to begin to fund these additional programs. So that's one thing. So we're reformulating the transportation demand management programs. We're trying to really take a fresh look at them and find ways that more people can participate in them. Obviously, there needs to be a way to pay for that. The other piece is that we're trying to work with TCAT in order to have them expand their services to serve some of those hours, particularly the grad students would find necessary in order for them to take advantage of public transportation. For instance, looking at the park and ride lots, those have to be served at least at peak hours by 10 or 15 minute service, frequent direct express service in those lots, and it has to run at extended hours. I mean, if it's not running from at least, say, 6:30 in the morning until 7 at night, it's probably not going to serve the full range of needs. And even then, it probably won't serve the full range of needs, but it can be better. One of the findings, one of the suggestions that's come out of the TGIS process is one for TCAT, and we've already made the suggestion because we haven't waited until the whole process is complete, and that is suggesting that it may be time for them to do a route and schedule study to take a look at how the efficiency of the use of their current resources, to be able to use the vehicles that they have now to better effect. The last one was done over 10 years ago. The routes have changed and modified. There's been growth and change in the community. Different areas have developed. And it's time, and they agree, it's time for them to take a whole look at the system and from the ground up and see what they can do. And then they also recognize that we need to work with them to help them grow in order to be able to provide the number of buses and the type of service that we would need in order to adequately serve people to get them out of single occupant vehicles.
I got to follow up. So are they actually planning on doing that? I know because a lot of those types of studies are very time-consuming and very expensive. So while I can...
It is both of those. And
I'm sure they...
Budget.
It is. Okay.
I think they voted to go ahead with it.
Okay.
David.
Do we have any statistics on the effect on ours of the giving the students for their first 2 years and then now the first year of free bus pass? It's much easier for us to tell the freshmen because we know what their patterns are. Because if they have a car, their only parking available to them is on North Campus. So we know that if they bring a car, they have a permit. For first-year graduate students, it's tougher to tell because they can be living off campus.
know if they have a car or not based on parking permit for kids. But I can say that before we were giving freshmen the free bus passes, out of
first year students.
Specifically freshmen. There's traditionally about 3,100 freshmen each year. And the year before we gave out the passes, about 160 freshmen brought cars out of the 3,100. Last year it was 143. Whether that's just a normal fluctuation or whether it was due to the passes, I don't know. Undergraduate students in particular tend to be a much, much smaller piece of the problem, especially as most of them are commuting. It's faculty and staff who create most of the commuting traffic, especially the peak hour commuting traffic through the community surrounding the university. Tamara?
Do you guys have any alternate or secondary backup
something that we've heard quite a bit from faculty, staff, and students alike, and we know that as we go forward, these programs need to build in some kind of new level of flexibility that we haven't had before, allowing people to switch modes more easily. Right now, I mean, we deal with annual parking permits, so we're looking into ways that we can deal with it on a shorter term or pay by use method instead. I'm sorry? It's something along those lines, yeah.
And this is just a sort of on the other end of the spectrum, a small thing that we heard is that the kids who fight all the time, it would be really helpful if there were better support facilities on campus. They knew they could have their bikes in a covered, secure place all of the time, and maybe lockers for their personal, publicize where are showers all over the campus where you can have a locker. These kinds of things make it, so if you do get caught in bad weather, or if you know that you can have your bike undercover, at least in the shoulder season, you can, help them out, perhaps extend the length of the season somewhat, which can actually help them do that.
Elizabeth.
Yeah, when the same subject said, I began to talk a lot of places where things that have covered on that, but many more about that could be put under Europe, and that they're actually in the past, they didn't come out. They're always true. I can't understand my guys, surely they're not that expensive. But the ones that, Golden Smith, they're always there. There are a lot of bike racks in that country. They're always there. You can't find a place. There's no bike racks in that country. You don't have to anything like that. And so you hook under a tree or something, you can get ticketed for doing that. And it seems so easy. If you could give us a place to put bikes, especially under a cover, because you never know what it's going to make. And there are places that, alongside the Johnson Museum, the whole wall of useless rooms and nothing's in there. Bike racks, which is the perfect thing to really see inside the museum, and you need to handle 30 bikes there. There's that long stairway down behind Mann Library that's very familiar to you guys. There's bike racks there. There's so many places to cover bike racks, and of course, there's bike paths, which don't exist on Forest Home Drive, and big places like Armory and Cherry Grove, and there's dangerous to ride, and it doesn't seem like it would be all that expensive to make a path, even a gravel path, for both walkers and bikers.
All of those things are definitely, we had a lot of public open houses. We had a lot of very specific suggestions for where bike paths and sidewalks to be. You may have
do have a very specific set of recommendations that we're working on for, in addition to the TDM, as I can set up that David has been focusing on, there is also this infrastructure component, which is, you know, building more bike paths, building more sidewalks, making it safer, making it, you know, more viable as a transportation alternative.
Are you the person that the planners can make sure that every time along the stairway is built, you have one of those ramps?
One of the proposed strategies is that Cornell actually adopts as a policy that every time a new surface is built, it includes a bike stair. So, again,
there's so many ways we need to get off and share in the bike and the stairs, especially just all those things that mount up to real inconvenience.
Mm-hmm. I have a comment about that, something related to that. Just having been a part of the planning, a couple of meetings having to do with planning of the child care facility, one of the things that several times matters came up about how green this facility could be, and when the suggestion was made, it was, it's too late. We are already more or less in compliance with some particular green standard.
Lead,
right. We're in compliance with that. But, you know, that's already fairly conservative. I mean, considering what's possible, you know, to make things more green. And it was because the building was not thought of in a more visionary way about, you know, what's going to be necessary when it's built. Rather, it was thought about, with the old standards in mind. And a lot of these things come to mind in this discussion. A similar thing comes to mind in this discussion. That why can't Cornell be that much farther ahead as a visionary institution and, you know, looking in instituting new things so that it doesn't have to say, I'm sorry, that's not in the budget, or that's an alternate that we had to leave out because we didn't put it in.
That's why you should be telling the administration that you want this plan supported.
Ah.
That's why we're here.
Okay.
I mean, and
did everybody catch that? Okay. Very good. We all caught it. One of the things that would be good to have then would be, a list of specific kind of visionary goals that we are going to be endorsing in the process of endorsing this plan, so that I think you've laid out a number of them, you know, in the, and then we've asked questions, and the question, for example, James' question was that your answer was, well, yes, that's in the budget now, but there are a bunch of things that aren't.
Should we get the money?
She can't
budget. Yes.
Right. That was talking about his point. So my point is that it would be nice to see those things concretely listed. Say, this is what we're endorsing. You know, not just, you know, the big dream about how we have to cut back on this. We're endorsing, you know, 10 park and ride lots with a significant amount of transportation, 10-minute intervals, blah, 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 you know, a whole bunch of things. Park and ride lots on Cornell's perimeter. That's Cornell land. There must be a lot of land around that could be used that way.
We're looking a little further out, around the urban core rather than around the central campus.
Oh, yeah, that's what I mean. I don't mean the central campus, but Town of Dryden, for example, you got two or three in the West Dryden.
Yeah. Probably closer in than that. What we have now is there are rural park and rides way out in Lansing,
right,
and Danby and
right,
Dryden and so
right,
forth. We're looking at areas like the area around 13 and 366,
right,
or by the hospital,
right,
or by Buttermilk Falls,
right,
or
and as much as possible utilizing existing parking lots so that you're not paving new areas,
right,
where you can double use,
right,
as much as possible.
Right.
Perry Mall is a good example of an existing one.
Right.
That is in use now.
Right.
I mean, that's an official parking lot, and it's extremely well served,
right,
by transit.
PNC lot seems to be turning into that too, but anyway.
Yeah, okay. Careful about that.
I know we do.
So we're working on all. I mean, this gives you the framework, but we're definitely working on developing a list of details of, you know, 5 suggested locations for park and ride lots,
mm-hmm,
with 10-minute express,
right,
service.
Right.
Okay.
So I think Dan could bring this in a formal proposal to us, and we can debate each of the points and do an endorsement a process, a resolution of endorsement process.
I think that what we would probably be able to send at this point is what our general goals are, the direction that we're looking. We haven't actually gotten to the point of specific plans yet, specific locations, or specific numbers or anything.
I see.
But this we're coming here today to say, is this the right direction to be going?
Well, to Elizabeth's point, though, I mean, you can be specific about staircases, that all the future staircases should have that built in. You can be specific about bike racks. It's cheap enough that there should be significant number of covered bike racks in every. I mean, heck, we have graduated curbs for people with disabilities. That's it's a formal law, I guess you could say, a state law. I mean, we can be ahead of things in prescribing particular conditions in buildings, new buildings that are going up.
Yeah, which is certainly the easiest place to begin.
Yeah. Well, yes.
What about promoting some kind of educational system to kind of promote all these optional ideas?
Yeah, and that falls squarely in my lap as doing the communications for transportation services.
Yeah. I mean, more like a campus-wide kind of like, not just coming to assembly, but actually getting that to everyone.
Yes, that would be critical.
We view that as being an essential component. For this to really be successful, that has to be there. And there probably needs to be more resources going into that. And educating the university about the link between sustainability and your choices, your personal choices in transportation.
I want to make one point here. We have 10 minutes left, and I have to make a statement about the campus code and take questions on it before we adjourn. I'm just wondering if we've had sufficient discussion now, and tomorrow I know you had your hand up, but I'd like to thank you very much for coming and presenting, and I think we have some interest in continuing to, but I think Dan's point is well taken for everybody to get your constituent assemblies to be more engaged, and send their members to elect them and send them, because we obviously need to have this be a vigorous committee, continue to be a vigorous committee. The last item on the formal agenda is the campus code, and I wanted to tell everyone that announced, but it's already been announced, that there will be an open forum on the campus code. In the Willard Strait Hall, similar to the one that occurred last year. This is on a revised version of the code. You have a draft of that revision. All of the assembly members, please acquaint yourself thoroughly with the draft revision, and talk it up. Report to your assembly that your respective assemblies first of all, the open forum is taking place, and that you will be voting upon this revised version in a subsequent university assembly meeting. And that vote will be to send something like this to the president for his action and trustees.
What time is that?
The forum is
4:30.
4 to 6 p.m. and it's in Willard Strait
Memorial Room.
Memorial Room.
I just wanted to add to that there's also an online forum like there was before for the crash report on each of the major issues addressed in the report, so that you can also post comments online if you're unable to attend that forum and that goes for another way.
Now I want to say one thing about that. The I've had a couple of people writing me letters individually, and they've brought up objections to one clause or another clause, and I'm happy to write back to folks, but I think it's also very important for people to send comments not just to small circles of folks, but either to the larger decision making bodies if you have questions or comments about the code so that we can have them on the table. They don't have to be brought by us as individuals in the name in the name of somebody else. So tell anyone who has comments that's great that you would have a comment, but please make it in a forum that can be part of public record so that we can discuss it. And we will have at a subsequent meeting the author of this, or the, excuse me, the editor of this document, Kevin Claremont, professor in law school, will be coming, as will other members of the campus, the Codes and Judicial Committee, to discuss the revised code with you. The basic point about it is that it is not a revision, substantial revision, but rather a streamlining, you could say, of the current code. It meets many of the needs that were expressed by the president in his letter, but also continues a lot of the important areas that the university as a whole thought were essential to the health and the proper standing of the code, continues to respect those. Any comments or questions about that? Yes.
I think there's no really easy way of comparing the two documents.
There is. You can have this right in front of you, and then go to the campus code, which is on the website. But
there's not a mock-up where you see the boldface changes in other fonts.
It would be really very... the main thing that's happened is that Title V has been merged with Title III, Title II, and there has been a clearing up of language. There's been some additions, but these have all been debated by the Codes and Judicial Committee. And this is a document that's been passed by the Codes and Judicial Committee as acceptable to the whole committee. I'm not saying that doesn't make it appropriate for you to do the comparison, but what I suggest is that you just get out the computer and look at the current code, and then do your comparison on that in that way. Any other questions? Okay. Yes.
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth.
So you got an email and I got it as well from Tim Murray.
Yes, I was referring to that, and I sent that immediately to Kevin Claremont. And my point in saying that it would be great if some comments of that sort would not go to us as a sort of subgroup, but actually would be addressed to the whole Codes and Judicial Committee or to the University Assembly or put on the forum more generally.
Was that provision in the old code, or is that added?
No, that's a new provision, and it was added, and I have language about it. This is a provision about videotaping. That is, there was a new provision that was devised. Oh, is this worth going through? It might be a point of interest for some of you to sort of pique your interest in the code. There's a new provision that was devised, which says that videotaping. Oh, in the Krauss report, it was recommended that videotaping, photographing, tape recording, or otherwise making any picture or sound recording of another person without that person's consent is a violation of the campus code. That's what the Krauss report proposed. We had some comments from campus members, to wit that that there was a need to cover things like videotaping of people having sex, filming bootleg movies, or filming dramatic presentations that are inappropriate. And how do we cover those, which are clear violations, torts, as the law professor would say? And so the campus Codes and Judicial Committee came up with the following language, that it is malicious, it is a violation to invade privacy or misappropriate property rights by videotaping. So the point is that the violation is not videotaping. The violation is invading privacy or misappropriating property rights. That's the violation. That's a tort. If it were a violation to videotape anything, we'd all be guilty. You know, anybody who has a video camera. Because we always do that. You know, we might be out there, happens to be a person walking by while we're filming at the front of McGraw Hall or something.
Are you filming the police taking you?
Well, but that's not a violation under this, because you're not misappropriating the property rights of the police person or invading his or her privacy, because he is involved in a public activity. So a misreading of what happens, or an incomplete reading, is also, it's important. But it's important to register your concern, but you don't register, it needs to be registered in a forum where it can be answered, you know, with some intelligent, well-informed answer. Okay. Any questions further? Well, this is terrific, everybody. Our next meeting is not the 10th.
The 24th.
All right. So we are skipping our bi-weekly meetings. We are now on a monthly schedule.
Well,
feel like the 10th is necessary?
There are these extra dates that are scheduled if you feel it's necessary,
right.
But that's at your discretion.
Right. And
this is the day after fall break.
The next regularly scheduled meeting is October 24th.
Fine. Is everybody agreeable with that? Terrific. Yes?
I have a question. What's the most efficient way to make sure that the assembly appointed people that go to the planning board or to ACT get that to us?
Assembly appointed people.
So there's the SA, some of these people, and the EA and GPSA appointed people.
Well, they should be through the liaisons from those respective assemblies. And we have them all here right now, right? We have liaison from graduate professional, we have liaison from employee, liaison from, faculty, it's faculty senate, and liaison from undergraduates. We have all four here. So the word is that you are not only representatives, you know, to the UA from your committee, but you actually bring, from your respective assemblies, you actually bring opinions from those assemblies and report them here. Having to do with committee business, or if you have something else you want to bring up from the assembly, then additions to the agenda when it comes time for new additions at the beginning of every meeting, then you bring them up then.
I'm taking care of the agenda, so if you guys have stuff you want to get on the agenda, just email me. Let me know.
Yeah, we should mention in executive committee, I had a meeting and we divided duties. That is, Jules is the agenda and programming person. Rodney will be in charge of assisting people with resolutions in finding their way to the proper places once they're, shepherding them through the assembly office process and getting them through completed appropriately here. I'll be doing the chairing of meetings for the time being. And James is cheering us on, I think. Yes.
Hi, I'm Pat Mahoney. I'm the employee assembly representative. I apologize for my tardiness. And I just wanted to say thank you for letting me come aboard. And I also represent Geneva as well. So
great.
I have a twofold purpose.
Great.
Terrific. Rodney is the employee chair, and you guys will be communicating quite a bit. Do I hear a motion? Any other further business? And I hear a motion to adjourn?
Motion.
Jules? A second? Approved? See you in a couple of, in a few weeks.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.